Exodus chapter 6. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh, for under compulsion he will let them go, and under compulsion he will drive them out of his land." God spoke further to Moses and said to him, "I am the Lord, and I appeared to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as God Almighty, but by my name, the Lord, I did not make myself known to them. I also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land in which they sojourned. Furthermore, I have heard the groanings of the sons of Israel because the Egyptians were holding them in bondage, and I have remembered my covenant. Say therefore to the sons of Israel, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will deliver you from their bondage. I will also redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments. Then I will take you for my people, and I will be your God. And you shall know that I am the Lord your God, who brought you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. I will bring you out to the land which I swore to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and I will give it to you for a possession. I am the Lord." So Moses spoke thus to the sons of Israel, but they did not listen to Moses on account of their despondency and cruel bondage. Now the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Go, tell Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to let the sons of Israel go out of this land." But Moses spoke before the Lord, saying, "Behold, the sons of Israel have not listened to me. How then will Pharaoh listen to me? For I am unskilled in speech." Then the Lord spoke to Moses and to Aaron, and gave them a charge to the sons of Israel and to Pharaoh the king of Egypt, to bring the sons of Israel out of the land of Egypt. These are the heads of their father's households: the sons of Reuben, Israel's firstborn, Hanoch and Palu, Hezron and Carmi. These are the families of Reuben. The sons of Simeon: Yemuel, Yamin, Ohad, Yachin, Zohar, and Shaul, the son of a Canaanite woman. These are the families of Simeon. These are the names of the sons of Levi, according to their generations: Gershon and Kohath and Merari. And the length of Levi's life was 137 years. The sons of Gershon: Libni and Shimei, according to their families: the sons of Kohath, Amram, Izhar, Hebron, and Uziel. And the length of Kohath's life was 133 years. The sons of Merari: Mahli and Mushi. These are the families of the Levites according to their generations. Amram married his father's sister Jochebed, and she bore him Aaron and Moses. And the length of Amram's life was 137 years. The sons of Izhar: Korah and Nepheg and Zichri. The sons of Uziel: Mishael, Elazphan, and Sithri. Aaron married Elisheba, the daughter of Aminadab, the sister of Nashon. And she bore him Nadab and Abihu, Eleazar and Ithamar. The sons of Korah: Asir and Elkanah and Ibiasaph. These are the families of the Korahites. Aaron's son Eleazar married one of the sisters of Putiel, and she bore him Phinehas. These are the heads of the father's households of the Levites according to their families. It was the same Aaron and Moses to whom the Lord said, "Bring out the sons of Israel from the land of Egypt according to their hosts." They are the ones who spoke to Pharaoh, of king of Egypt, about bringing out the sons of Egypt, the sons of Israel from Egypt. It was the same Moses and Aaron. Now it came about on the day when the Lord spoke to Moses in the land of Egypt, that the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "I am the Lord, speak to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, all that I speak to you." But Moses said, before the Lord, "Behold, I am unskilled in speech. How then will Pharaoh listen to me?"
And we'll explain that because it's very important to end at that particular location. Talk about that in a minute. No more comments. What is unusual about this particular chapter? Oh, here we go.
Well, it just seems like Moshe is, again, trying to convince God that he's really not the man for the job.
Okay, we'll get to that. We will get to that because it's a very interesting chapter, Ellie.
Well, this would, as far as counting generations, this would show how many generations there were to Moses, and it would fly in the face of the concept of having millions of people. You have 70 come out, now you have millions, because these women are not having 30 children. They're having two or three.
That's another subject matter we'll talk about later on as we keep on going down, especially the book of Numbers.
Well, I found the comment is interesting that it says, but speaking of the children of Israel, they hearken not unto Moses. And then you next get this whole genealogy, and there are quite a lot of them have a history of not listening to God anyway, some of these people. They're kind of anti-heroes, really. The whole list of the genealogy, we can remember some of the very negative stories about them.
Okay. Got one more comment over here.
Well, you know, like when God talked to Abraham and warned Abraham of the exile into Egypt or that all that, it said around 400-ish years, 430 years or something like that. But this tells us that from the time of Jacob's sons, at least, because we have some of the other genealogies too, at the most there's four generations listed. So you have like dad, you know, son, grandson, and great-grandson, and that's about it.
Yep. Yeah, we'll talk about that too. Very, very interesting knowing what's going on here. Carmel.
Well, it seems that like it begins where he says, "I appeared to Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov," but God is getting ready to reveal himself, a new self, to Moshe.
Okay, we'll talk about that too. It's a fascinating chapter. I love this chapter. Well, there's a lot of chapters I like. This one here, I think, is telling us an awful lot. All right? I'm going to explain to you a little bit how I think. Just a little bit how I think. Right? When I read a story of somebody, if I'm Adam, I make myself Adam to find out what's going on. Because B, you have no idea what's going on. We have wonderful hindsight. Sometimes you got to put the hindsight aside and says, "Here I am, I'm Adam. What's happening?" You know. And with Noah, I said, "Wow, I'm Noah. What's happening?" You know. I've got all this wisdom I got from hindsight. I'm thrown out and try to live that particular person that he's saying, "Oh, what's going on?" And each one of these patriarchs, Abraham I did that with, and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph, and each one of Jacob's sons, I'm also doing the very same thing. When the group came together, he says, "Well, let's go kill him." What's going through their brain? You know, yeah, if I was one of them, what would I think? You know, so I put myself in their shoes for a while, try to understand the unknown things that's happening. Now, and the book here of Exodus is very fascinating. All right, what does the first sentence tell you? Okay, I'll read it. "And Yahuwah," or Yahweh, "said unto Moses, Now shall ye thou see what I will do to Pharaoh, for a strong hand shall he let them go, and with a strong hand he shall drive them out of his land." That word "strong" is the very same word that we have in Exodus, and only in Exodus record, where Pharaoh had a hardened heart. That word is a strong heart, strong will, strong power, and within oneself. Now, why did God say this to Moses on the very first sentence? Okay, you got to go back to the previous chapter. All right? Verse 22 and 23 of the fifth chapter. I can read a different translation here. "And Moses returned to Yahuwah and said, Lord, wherefore hast thou dealt ill with this people? Why is it that thou hast sent me? For since I came to to Pharaoh to speak to, in thy name, he hath done ill to this people. Neither have thou delivered thy people at all. Pretty powerful words, aren't they? Now all of a sudden God comes back and he says, okay, Moses, thou shalt now see what I will do to Pharaoh. I mean, you got this conversation going between, what nice casual, by the way, I don't know what's going on. Please tell me. No, he actually says, God, what are you doing? You said you'd deliver them. You said you'd deliver them out of this turmoil. And look what's happened. They made it worse. All right? Now keep that part in mind. It is getting worse. Remember I told you the fourth Pharaoh, right? This fourth Pharaoh, we don't know exactly who he is yet. We're not worried about that right now. We know that he was worse than the one before. The one before wanted to kill, right? All the babies. That guy's dead. He's finished. Gone. Now this new one comes on, and he's worse than the one before. He's more bureaucratic, more dictatorial, more brutal than the others that were before him. So he got a picture now, and in verse 2 here, he says, and Elohim spoke to Moses again. And he said to him, what did he say to him? I appeared to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob by El Shaddai. What does that mean? The one that destroys, the destroyer, the one that deluged, brought forth the flood and wiped everything out. That's what he's telling. Now this is who Abraham and Isaac and Jacob know me as. The one that has power to do major destruction. Now we're 400 years has gone by now. This point in time, not that from that point, but pretty close to it. And now he says, now, they did not know me by that name, or they did not call me by that name. Now we have a name we have to deal with, right? Now, the fascinating name about this thing is fascinating. And what did he say? What did he say? Remember chapter 3? He introduced a name. What did he call himself? No, he didn't say that. What did he say? All right, it's translated. Now, this is where you're going to understand something. But it's translated into our English, into the word, I am. That's not what the Hebrew says. At all. The Hebrew, the word does not come. It comes from the word, hey, yod, hey. Hey, yod, hey. A verb. Remember, everything God does is action what he is. His actions tell you something about him. The name means what? It comes from the Hebrew word meaning what we would translate as to come. But this is past tense. So he's saying, I came that I came. Now it's past tense. Why is he saying past tense? Because he's there. What did he come? When he came to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, what did he came as? Not come as, came as. El Shaddai. Right? Now Moses, is this the first time Moses heard El Shaddai? Did he hear it in chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3, chapter 4, chapter 5? Now we hear it here, chapter 6. Now Moses knew what that meant. One that's got incredible power. Almighty power. Great strength. And there he is now. Now we have this conversation between Moses and the Eternal. Not a conversation, but anybody else. Just between these two. And sometimes we think that Moses is trying to get him way out of it. No. He just got to say in the previous chapter, why have you sent me? Every time when I came and did what you told me to do in your name, guess what happened? It got worse. Right? Got worse. That's very, very important. Then God comes back and says, you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh. Now you will understand. And in Hebrew it's very, very clear. You shall see. You shall know that I will use my power Now remember what he said to Moses, what he said to him? Tell them that, what? I will kill your firstborn. Whew. Pretty powerful, right? Tell them I'll kill your firstborn. So now we come here, we're seeing this thing, and he says, Elohim was not called by the name of Yahuwah or Yahweh by them, that is, that found him, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They did not know the I am or I came being. All right, now put it in simple language. Try to put it in a different terminology. He uses the word I came. That I came. Now he says, unto Abraham, put it in your words, I came to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and now I came to fulfill what I said to them. I came to tell El, I came to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and I came, he now is talking to Moses, to do what I came to say I'm going to fulfill. It's past tense. He's there. He's not coming to do it. He's doing it. If that's what he's telling these people. Another way you look at it, I came who came to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I came to you as well. I came to deliver these people out. I came to deliver them from what? It says later on. The burden. We'll get to that word. The writ. We'll get to that word. He came to do something. The first thing Moses had to learn about God is he has came to do something. He hasn't come to do something, he came. Now when he comes down from above, he's came. He's not still coming, he's there now, he's present. I came here to do this job. Yes.
Is there a pattern being established here? Just as God came first to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as El Shaddai,
as
the
El
Almighty
Shaddai.
Destroying
right.
One.
Right.
He has to come first as that before he makes himself known as the delivering right. One. Is that a sequence that is a pattern that holds true throughout the scriptures? He heals and then he destroys.
He came to heal. He came to survive. He came to deliver. He came to fulfill. He came to do.
But he destroys often first before he delivers or before he came. Right. Is that a pattern?
So when we look at this thing, we look at the coming of Jesus, right? Or the coming of the Messiah, right? Well, when he comes, we're not going to say he's coming. We're going to say he came. And he's doing something. Institute something. Yes.
But that's really only because we're limited right now on this planet to time and space.
Right.
And I had a rabbi teacher tell me that the Yud Heh Vav Heh transcends that. It's past, present, and future.
No, that's what rabbis teach. I have done my research. I couldn't find it in any way, shape, or form. I'm only looking at the word. I'm looking at literally what says there in Hebrew. I came that I came. That's what it says. I'm saying, that's interesting. Does that mean he's coming? No, he came. What did he come to do? He says he's going to come to fulfill his promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He's doing it.
So in biblical Hebrew, there are tenses? Because
the
I was
tenses,
told
yes.
It's there always
the
in the present.
There is past tense, which is perfect tense, and future tense, which is to come.
Yeah.
To come is future. Okay. This is not, and that tense, the Hebrew right here, is past tense. Past tense. Okay. Very important. No, it's past tense. Now, why is he doing this? What is he going to try to prove? What do you think he's trying to prove? He's going to bring about what he said. He's going to bring the happenings. He's going to bring about what he said he's going to do. My will will be done. And guess what's going to happen when he does his will? You think you're going to be sitting here thinking it's great and wonderful? Listen to what the people said. And we're going to get into this thing. He goes on, he said to Moses, he now says, after he told him who he is, and he says, I came as El Shaddai, but not I came. I have also established, past tense, my covenant with them, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give them the land of Canaan and the land to their pilgrimage, wherefore they are strangers. He's already gave that to them. It's past tense. Past tense. Now he comes in with Moses and he says, I have also heard the groanings of the children of Israel, whom the Egyptians have kept in bondage, and I have remembered my covenant. Now, that doesn't mean he remembered, he forgot it. He's going to now bring it into existence. Now, as we go through Exodus, we're going to learn a little bit more about the feeling of the people. Because, see, if we don't understand the feeling of the people, we won't understand what their problem is. We have in our world, we label people because we have this wonderful thing called hindsight, beautiful hindsight. We understand everything. Why didn't they see it? Why didn't they understand it? Because they were what? Sinners, liars, cheaters, crooks, unbelievers. What was wrong with them? Same thing is wrong with American people today. They have no knowledge. They're not aware of anything. All aware of what's happening to them now, today. Many of you are suffering from finances. Many of you are losing your home. Many of you are losing your job. Many of you are in turmoil. So that's what's happening to you right now. And you say, ill will is happening to me. And we have a tendency, because it's our thinking, right? Oh, the reason why you have a problem because sin, inequity, transgression, you're doing something wrong. You are breaking God's law. No, that's not necessarily true, is it? The righteous will die with the unrighteous. The righteous will die with the unrighteous. What do you think? One of these days, I'm going to give a sermon. Not a sermon, I'm going to break down Matthew 24. You've got to understand exactly what he is saying. It's precisely in detail. Now, let's go here. Yes.
Real quick. I just want to add that there's discipline in that too, that we go through a lot of these things for discipline. Because he loves us. And
right, right. And we're going to see discipline here, too.
Right. I just wanted to add.
Moses right now is being disciplined. He's being disciplined. All right? Because he said, you didn't even come to deliver them. And he turned to Moses and says, you will now see what I will do to Pharaoh. Wow. If you were Moses, would you say, oh, good? No, I think you'd be quaking in your boots. That's what Moses is known for. Being afraid of the creator of heaven and earth. Being afraid of this one that's so powerful, so mighty, so strong. What happened to Moses' life? Remember the hand in, the hand out? I'll tell you, if you were there, you were Moses, you stuck your hand in your garment and you pull it out, would you say, oh, no big thing. Be terrified. You'd be frightened. You're going to die. You're in the process of dying now. Wow. What about that snake? It wasn't just an ordinary garden snake. It was probably big enough to kill him. And he backed away from it. He's afraid of that thing, right? We talked about the snake before, right? He's picking up by his tail. What's the snake represent? Power, the power of Satan. Guess what, Moses? Pick it up. Now you have power over the snake. You have power over the snake. You have power over the devil. You have power over what happened in the garden. Now that's a pretty powerful statement, isn't it? Now when God said through Apostle Paul that he has not given us a spirit of
fear,
but given us a spirit of power. You can pick up that snake by the tail and you have power over it. You have power over every demon there is. You have power over everything you have. What we don't believe is that we don't. We're afraid of the snake. How many times have you probably heard in your world, the devil made me do it, or the demon got in my life, the demon possessed, the demon was involved. What? What? If you have it by the tail, it can do nothing to you. You have the power. You are called the powers of what? the sons of God. Not the sons of mom and dad or Europeans or Israelites or Jews or Ephraimites. It's far greater than that, right? So, Moses, with a picture, when you see Moses here, we need a Bible, see a picture, because what does the apostle, I think it was Paul, the things that are written there, for what reason? For our admonition, for our understanding, for our thinking. And so now we look at Moses and say, what happened here? Whew, wow, a lot of things happened here. This comment?
Yeah, I just wanted to know if the snake knew that I had power over it.
Did what?
I just want to know if the snake knew I had power over it.
Yes, he does. He cannot do anything without the authority of the Creator of heaven and earth. The whole book of Job explains that in detail. He cannot take over.
But his lie to us is that to convince us that we don't have the power.
Right, but that was prior to when? When you now have the Spirit of the living God and you talk about the Creator of heaven and earth, your Father now has given you that power. You could spot a lie now, my dear. I know you can, and I know you have, and I know you said it. Piece of cake.
But Hasatan, his goal is to convince us that we don't have the power. But he does know that we have the power over him if we exercise it.
Yes.
But his lie to people and us as a whole is to convince us we don't have that power.
What is the war we are in?
Spiritual war.
Let's get more specific. Words.
Words.
Thy word is true. Word. We're going to Devarim Elohim. That is your tool. That is your sword. And your sword should be out there not to kill one another, but to destroy the lie. And the only way you're going to ever understand what that war is all about, and none of you are in boot camp, none of you are there. You are now at war. You're here to listen to words. I'm a world strong person about words. You know that. I teach words, I teach words, I teach words. And you all know that. I don't teach concepts. I teach words. You must look and see what it says. Words, words, words. We are at war. And we are at war with and the fiery darts of the devil. What he's going to shoot? Devil? Darts? Those darts are lies. They can't do harm to you if you have what in front of you? The shield. Shield of what? What does that mean? You believe the word of God beyond all means, and you'll walk in that thing. You'll live in that thing, and your life will be it. It is not temporary. It's permanent. So when you the question is, if you put down your shield, what are you putting down? You are putting down truth. Thy word is truth. All right. Now, every one of you in this room, I know. Because you're not here because, listen to me, you're here because you know that God has given you that shield. You know that God has given you the sword. You know that God has given you that helmet. You know God has given you the pair of shoes to go to war with. You know what it's all about. That's nothing new to you. None of you, that's new to you. You all know that. And so now, we go on. Exodus 6, verse 6. Excuse me. He gets mad at Moses here again. We'll get to the point. But right now, he's begging here, and he says, therefore, say unto the children of Israel, I am Yahweh, when I'm putting this word, I come that I come, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptian, and I will rid you out of their bondage, and I will redeem you with a stretched out arm and with great judgments. You understand why I say the word I came? He's doing so. It's action. He's not standing there just saying, oh, that's my name now. No, his name means he's doing something. He's instituting his promise, instituting what he said. He's instituting his commandment. He's instituting what he promised to me to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. What was the promise that God gave to Abraham? What the first promise was? I will do what? The whole world will be blessed. That is happening. Now, that came already. We are part of the came. We are part of the... A lot of people are not yet part of that came, but they will be. When everybody turns and turns into the creator of heaven and earth and turns into the real Messiah and turns into the Savior of the world, as John the Baptist said, there he goes. Well, it takes away the sins of the world. Then you got it. He came to do that, right? Why did Jesus come? He came to do something. What did he come to do? To destroy the works of the devil. What did he say? The devil is now judged. His sentence is already there. And guess who gets to kill him? The Messiah gets to kill him. So I just want to bring that to you. And so, real quick words here. The word burden here in Hebrew, it really means that one which is a compulsory service, like slavery. Like we did to the black people here in the United States of America. That kind of a pulp, that kind of slavery. All right? Bad stuff. And he says, I will rid you. I'll take, the word rid in Hebrew means, I will take away and I'll rescue you from that slavery. Right? On the other word, he says, redeem. Interesting word. What does redemption mean in Hebrew? It's the next of kin that buys something. So you are now free, or you get to have what you once had and it was taken away from you. Now how close that tells you that the creator of heaven and earth is to you and to me and to all those who were in Israel at that time. They were his what? Kinship. His heritage. His children. They were somebody else's. They were his. So now he's going to buy them back. And the price is very, very heavy. And when God has bought you back, the price was very, very heavy. When he bought you, he paid a pretty heavy price, didn't he? You see the analogy here? We can criticize these Israelites that they didn't cooperate with Moses because Moses said what the name of God was and told them, this is what he said, I do it in my name. And they criticized him. To them, was it real? What was real to them? What was happening to them? Let's read on, because it's very, very important. But first, I want to take to verse 6 here. This is very important. And I will take, tell Moses to tell these people now, because the reason why he had this, I will take you to be my people, and I will be your Elohim. And you will know, you shall know that I am, I came that I came, your Elohim. Which brings you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. And I will bring you into the land concerning which I swore unto Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that I will give you as a heritage. Why? I come that I come. I come, I came that I came. You're going to get your land back. He's fulfilling the promise. He's carrying it out. So it's more than just knowing this yod hey vav hey. We get to find out what does that verb mean. It's a very powerful, powerful, active verb. Very, very powerful thing in Hebrew. Yes?
Richard, I just want to say that it's really then no accident. You know, God's name, Yahweh, meaning right. I came that I came, right?
Yeah.
Because... the very mysterious, and nobody knows the real origin of it, of the Passover Seder where you take the Afik Omen.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That actually means in Greek, I came.
Right.
So in other words, and nobody knows where that, the Jews do not know where that tradition came from.
It so blessed be God that they do that, because we get to learn from that.
Yes. Yes, it's true. But it's Yeshua himself, right, in a way identifying with God. He came.
Now, and this statement, I got to continue. I got short time left here now. In verse 9, it says, Moses spoke unto the children of Israel, but they hearkened not unto Moses for anguish of spirit. This is English. 6:11. And for cruel bondage. I said, okay, what does that word anguish mean? Anguish of spirit. What do you think it means? In Hebrew, it basically means to curtail, hold back, not go forward. Their spirit couldn't go forward. They couldn't believe. They couldn't accept it. Why? Because what was happening to them? You remember the previous chapter? The spirit was curtailed. It did not believe the words. They were hopeless. Why? Because of the cruel bondage. What was happening to them? Remember the previous chapter? What's happened to them? What's happened to the leadership? They were being what? They were being beaten. That's what they were being. They were being beaten. Now, if you're being beaten, and here Moses said, he's came to deliver you and deliver you out, they're going to say, no, he's not. And you say, oh, what a lousy believer. They have no faith in God. They don't believe God. What happened to their world? What's going on in their world? Their spirit was getting shortened. I mean, that's human beings, right? We're not talking about people who have the power of God's spirit in them and they have to rise up. No, they're human beings, flesh and blood. They're afraid. They're scared. They look at what's around about them. And you've got beaten. You're being beaten. Do you think that's going to say, oh, yeah, great, I have faith in God? No, you won't hear it. This is what's happening, Moses. This is what's going on, Moses. Yes.
It's kind of like what was happening to them physically also happened to them spiritually. I mean, they were beaten down.
You break a child's spirit. We know that.
Yeah.
Apostle Paul warns that. Don't break a child's spirit.
What's the difference between this broken spirit in this verse and when they saw the giants in Cana and they said, oh, there are giants there and we can't conquer them?
That's fear. That's not broken spirit. That's fear.
Okay.
That's different. These pipe up. This Hebrew word is that they curtailed or stopped. Their spirit was broken. When you're beaten so much, the average human being will weaken. They'll submit to anything to stop being beaten. And that's natural. Human beings are going to do it. And remember, the leadership is being beaten. I know Sesame DeMille shows you everyone under the sun. But the Bible doesn't say that. It says the leadership was being beaten. All right? Let's get on with this chapter. We want to bring these things in because it's very important to us to understand the conversation that God has had with Moses. And what Moses had to say to God. Because Moses had to be learned something about God that Moses didn't know. Burning bush is one thing, you know, snake is the other thing, you know, putting that in my hand, pouring water in your blood, that's the one thing. But what's happening? I come and tell them, why did you send me for? Everything I ever said has been worse, it's been ill for them, and you didn't even come to deliver them. That's what Moses believed, right? And he believed, what is it? You go there and you bring them back. Oh! Now he didn't say, oh, yeah, okay, you know, it was hard work. It was a frightening thing for him to do. You had to be assured by God that the ones who are out to kill you are dead and buried. They're not going to bother you anymore. They're going to be finished, so don't be afraid of them. So we got a picture. Now God keeps on moving. Verse chapter 10. And God spoke again. Go and speak to Pharaoh. And let the people go. And Moses said, got to go back here. I think there's one more thing I forgot something I wanted to say. Very, very important. After verse 8. The series is, how many things did Elohim say that he was going to do for Israel? Four. There's four things. One, bring them out from the burdens and rid them out of Egypt, out of bondage. Two, will redeem them with an outstretched hand or arm with great judgments. 3, take them from the people, take them for myself, and they'll be Elohim and I'll be them. 4, bring them into their land.
For heritage.
Well, the heritage. When he becomes their people, they become their, that is the heritage of God. I understand what you're saying. How many glasses of quote wine do we speak Passover?
4.
Now, what's the last one for?
No.
That's put in there by something else, but don't worry about that one. There's 4 glasses that we drink, glasses or say sips, okay, we don't get drunk. There's 4 purposes why we do it, right? And that is for the purpose, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4. It's right here, Passover night. This is the Passover book, right?
Yep.
And when you go through the Passover, you're going to read these things. Bring them out of burden, okay, 1. 2, outstretched arm, did the jab, and he's going to make you my people, and you're going to be my God, okay, and then bring you to the land. Well, he said, well, he hadn't brought me to the land yet. Neither did Jesus partake of the 4th glass. He says, I will not take of this until. He wasn't talking about all of them, he was talking about, I won't take of the 4th glass until. So that job not done. You understand the message of Passover? At least a little bit of it? All right. Now we don't, quote, we could disagree with the context. I'm just telling you what the picture is going to show you. All right. Now let's go on. Got to get into this. Verse 12. And Moses spoke before Yahweh, saying, behold, the children of Israel have not hearkened unto me. How then shall Pharaoh hear me? For I am of... Only 2 places in the entire Bible that phrase is used. And it's in this chapter. What's the problem? What's the problem? He has the gift of gab. What did he tell them? He spoke in the name of the Creator of heaven and earth and told them all these promises. He told them the truth. What happened? Did he make a mistake? Absolutely not. When it happened, he said it. Guess what happened? They got beaten. Ill will came upon them. Bad things happened to them. All right? So what do you think about uncircumcised lips? Stop and think for a moment. What is he talking about? Why does he use that phrase? He's not talking about real physical taking, you know, cut your lips off. He's talking about words that come out of his mouth. They weren't uncircumcised to him. They were uncircumcised to whom? Those who would hearing. The Israelites would not hear it. And so he says, how can this? Listen to the words of Moses. He said to Yahuwah, the people did not hear or accept what Moses said to them of what the great promises of Yahweh promised to them. They could not accept that Moses was telling them the truth. They couldn't believe it. Have you ever worn in your world, your life, have you ever come to the point where you say, well, you know, I'm not quite sure whether I believe God, because look what's happened to me. I'm being beaten. Can you walk up and say, I believe you? No, Job was one of the most unusual men. Though you slay me, I will worship you. Wow, that's a pretty powerful statement, isn't it? It's a man of tremendous amount of faith, tremendous amount of dedication, tremendous amount of loyalty to God. Now Moses turns to Yahuwah and says, the Pharaoh is not going to hear either. My lips are uncircumcised. He is not going to hear either. Well, I'm going to tell him the truth. I'm going to tell him what's going to happen to him, what's going to happen to his nation, that his own son will die, and he will not hear me. It's not clear, is it? So we have this thing of... One time he ever uses it right here. What he is to tell the people and to Pharaoh is as though his lips were saying, is not real. What did Pharaoh say? Nah, ain't gonna happen. What did the Israelites say? Nah, ain't gonna happen. They didn't listen. The point was hearing. So unto the hearer, the lips are uncircumcised. Have you ever, in your personal private life, gone before God, read what he said, and you didn't hear it? You wanted to hear something else than what is written. Okay, I'll give you a real big example. How many of you read Jeremiah 10? And you didn't want to believe it, and you didn't hear it, you refused to hear it, and guess what you did? Your ears were closed, and God's lips were uncircumcised to your ears. You wouldn't hear him. You wouldn't respond. You wouldn't obey. Why? Ha! Hey, it's fun. In this case, with these, it's torture, beating, bondage, horrible things. How many of you have been in a real, real hard, difficult, real, real life? You cry out to God. He doesn't deliver you. And you're saying, oh, he's not hearing me. That's true. You're supposed to hear him. All right, let's continue on here. Now, it's very fascinating. He turns around and says to Moses, the 13th verse, and Yahuwah spoke unto Moses and Aaron and gave them charge unto the children of Israel and charge unto Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to bring the children of Israel out of Egypt. It's a powerful word, isn't it? All right. What do you think it means in Hebrew? To appoint. To give charge to. Now, we see this previous chapter. We keep on reading. It's very fascinating now. God comes on and he says, verse 14. Well, before that, now Yahuwah tells Moses and Aaron who they will appoint. Note, it's only three tribes. Tribe of Reuben, tribe of Simeon, and tribe of Levi. No other ones. The Jews are not there. Ephraimites are not there. The Manassehites are not there. The Danites are not there. Just these four. Now, listen very carefully. I want to explain something to you. We'll drop down to a very interesting statement. Verse 16. And these are the names of the son of Levi. One of them was named Kohat. How long did Levi live? 100 and what? 137 years. Fascinating. Then Kohat had a son. One of his sons was Aram. And then how long did Kohat live? 133 years. Interesting. Now, very important. I told you before in the book of Genesis, right? When God starts giving the names of how long they live, that name is extremely important to God. He's telling us a story from that point on. This is not the story of Reuben's, not the story of Simeon's, not the story whose else was that? No, yeah, just those two. Nor is the story of any of the others. We're talking about the family of Levi. Now, all of a sudden, we know what Levi family was to become, right? But they weren't yet there. They were appointed later. But you see what's going on here? And this is the reason. Now, how many? Now, keep on going down. And we had, and then, of course, Aram had Aaron and Moses. And how long did Aram live? 137 years. Fascinating. Fascinating, isn't it? Now, as we keep on going, you see there at verse 25... Eleazar had a son, took him a daughter of Putiel to wife. And she bears him penis. What about the other sons? You remember when Levi took on a particular woman? He already had a daughter. So now we get know this. Phinehas comes in because Phinehas did something. The reason why he's named here is because something he did very critical in the book of Numbers. We'll get there when we get there. But I want to read this something. Four generations of each name, with the ages of the death, lived over 100 years. Aaron was 3 years older than Moses, and either died the same year Moses or a year or two earlier. Moses died at 120. So Aaron must have died about maybe 120 himself, maybe 121. We don't know, plus or minus. You see, old people, aren't they? See, in our world, we think a generation to generation is 30 years, 40 years. We're pushing it to 60, you know. Everybody dies. No, back then it was 100, 130, 140, 120 years. And now you go back to what God said to Abraham. What do you say? 400 years or 400 generations. He wasn't talking about all the sons of Abraham. We're talking about one of those families of Abraham was going to have those 400 years. And they're counted. Right here. They're counted. Right? All right. Now, of course, it says, it was to bring them out of the land of Egypt according to their armies. Or their that army, by the way, in Hebrew, it really means the assembly, according to their assemblies. And this is what I think. This is my personal opinion only. This is why Reuben's there and Simeon's there, is to organize that particular battle as they were to carry them out of Egypt. They were the heads, those men that were listed there were the ones to organize that particular march or that particular departing from Egypt. That's just the thinking of my mind. That doesn't mean anything. To tell you, sometimes I have my thoughts and they're worthless. Now, verse 27, I want you to go there and read it for a moment. All those names been listed, right? All those names. Verse 27. These are they which spoke to Pharaoh. Oh, wait a minute. Sesame DeMille straightened me out on that one, didn't he? It was only Moses. Moses did all the talking. Wait a minute. Do you see all the names there? Especially the ones that's got a specific name and a certain age. Of the tribe of Levi? See, we have a picture of image of what a motion picture guy put together, and it's really kind of sits in our minds, and we don't really realize it was more than just Moses and more than just Aaron. It was those that were appointed. So it wasn't just a one-man show. All right? Now, it came to pass on a specific day, and God spoke again to Moses. Now God speaking to Moses. Moses speaking to God. Now God speaking to Moses. God speaking to Moses. Now he says, verse 29, 26, 28, 29. And Yahweh spoke unto Moses, saying, I am Yahuwah, or I came that I came. Speak unto Pharaoh, king of Egypt, all that I say unto you. Now once he's done, he did the appointing, right? He put in charge, right? All these men to do the job they're supposed to be due. And they were all to go to Pharaoh at the same time that Moses is going to go. And Moses turns around and says, oh my. And Moses said before Yahuwah, behold, I am uncircumcised lips. How shall Pharaoh hearken unto me? You see what has to end there? Same scenario. Same picture. He's not going to hear. He's not going to listen. What did Jesus say to his apostles? Blessed are your ears, because it was given to you to hear. The people of Israel, when Moses spoke to them, it wasn't given unto the leadership to hear, to understand anymore. And it was given to Pharaoh to hear and to understand. Now, when God has given you ears to hear, you are blessed. And you can hearken unto, and you can respond. If your neighbor hasn't gotten ears to hear, Don't judge them. Don't judge them. Don't call them all sorts of filthy names. Their ears are not open, nor are their eyes. You understand what I'm saying to you today? As we go through the book of Exodus, you're going to see an awful lot of turmoil. And I think if you really try hard, you will see the tribulation. You will see the tribulation that Jesus talked about. You will see the tribulation. Do you think the Israelites were free from sorrow, sadness? Or were they free from anything? Or did they actually feel what was going on? They were part of the beating. They are part of being humiliated. In Matthew 24, if I go there these days, I'm going to explain more in detail exactly what Jesus was saying. Because it's going to affect you, your life, your family, and your existence. It's real. It's true. And it's going to happen. It's not going to happen. It's going to happen. My time is up. I hope you gave you something to think about. Don't have to agree with what I'm saying. But I just want you to think about this term, I came that I came. He is an active, powerful, living God instituting his promise that he made to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob. We think he's taking him too long. For him, it's only been 6 days. So what's your problem?